As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeatherSnapCam.com. That's FeatherSnapCam.com.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. Today we've got episode 7 of Bees in the News, and we are going to jump right in. Coming to us today out of Alabama, dangerous feral swarms of bees found and euthanized in Alabama. The Alabama Department of Agriculture and Industries, ADAI, Tuesday announced that feral swarms of Africanized honeybees have been found in Jackson and St. Clair counties. Both finds were collected by beekeepers and have been euthanized to protect Alabama's honeybees. In an announcement, the department said it is taking swift action to mitigate any risks associated with the bees. Africanized honeybees, or AHB, differ from European honeybees, or EHB, in behavior, not appearance. They can be highly defensive and pose a risk to humans and animals. Officials say it is important to avoid provoking any swarms and to seek professional assistance for bee removal. Neither European nor Africanized honeybees will indiscriminately attack humans or animals. However, AHB are more defensive, more easily disturbed, and respond in greater numbers than EHB. They will pursue a perceived threat for more than a mile. They also swarm more frequently, every 6 weeks, as opposed to once a year for European honeybees. For bees, stinging is a defensive behavior employed by the colony to protect young bees and their food supply. African honeybees will also nest in any available cavity or in the open. That includes places like water meter boxes, metal utility poles, cement blocks, junk piles, and house eaves. Other potential nesting sites include overturned flower pots, old tires, mobile home skirts, and abandoned structures. So folks, I want to make sure that you understand how important it is to really pay attention to this. These Africanized honeybees have been in the U.S. for a very, very long time. But if you look at what they just said in the article, they look like regular European honeybees. I've seen so many videos on TikTok over the years and different places online where everybody's out there hanging out and there's happy little music and they have no protective gear on and they're like, oh, let me go play with this cool, happy little thing of bees over here. Please know that there is a lot of editing that goes into what is posted online. These people have already probably approached the bees with protective gear. They've assessed the level of aggressiveness and the temperament of the bees before they're going in and just, you know, going in with nothing on at all. You are unnecessarily placing yourself, your pets, your family at risk by messing around with these bees of an unknown origin. So if you're not familiar with swarms, you don't know how to manage them, you don't have appropriate protective gear, call someone who can help, right? Because this, I mean, like I said, they will hunt you down. They will chase you and you can jump in the water. They'll wait for you to come up, right? So, you know, there's not just an easy out on that one. There's a little bit more to the article, but that's kind of the highlights here. Number two, Vermont becomes second state to take big steps for bees. The Vermont legislature enacted a bill curbing the use of bee toxic neonic pesticides on the first day of pollinator week. In a timely gift to its bees, butterflies, and birds statewide, the Vermont legislature overrode Governor Phil Scott's veto yesterday to enact H-706 into law. The new law makes Vermont the second in the country following New York to restrict the largest uses of neonicotinoid or neonic pesticides, the bee-killing pesticides that may also be some of the most ecologically destructive since DDT. The vote marks a meaningful start by Vermont's leaders to Pollinator Week, the national week-long celebration that is often filled with empty praise of our critical pollinating species, but little action to protect their disappearing populations. Although recent headlines imply bee populations are doing just fine, the pollinator crisis is as severe as ever, with severe risks to our food and ecosystems. So it's interesting. I'm not an expert in neonicotinoids. I don't know all of the things that are negative or just how detrimental they may be other than what I've heard and what I've read. Now, Randy Oliver, who we're going to have on here in the next couple of weeks, made a really interesting statement about this in a video I saw of him. It was about an hour long video. And he was talking about an area out in the Midwest where they know there's a lot of neonicotinoid use out there. And some of these beekeepers out there were having massive honey crops. It was a really interesting thing that he said about that. So I'm going to try and pick his brain about that some more when we have him on and see if he can shed some light on that. The next article is coming out of the USDA. Now, this article is not specific to the honeybees, but I thought it was pretty fascinating anyway. The right-sized nest can maximize pollination capabilities of solitary bees. Solitary bees have a shorter lifespan compared to honeybees, usually lasting the spring or summer season. These bees have limited time to perform a lot of pollination work, and they can use all the help they can get. The USDA's Agricultural Research Service, Insect Genetics and Biochemistry Research, participated in a study led by the North Dakota State University that aimed to provide insights on how to help solitary bees maximize their pollination performance and to aid in pollination management. The study focused on the alfalfa leaf-cutting bee to determine how modifying the nesting cavity diameter of solitary bees can enhance bee conservation performance and management practices. The pollination work by this species of solitary bee is crucial for alfalfa seed production. So again, interesting article about solitary bees and some of the things that they have been able to discover through some of this study. Kind of cool. Hope you enjoy that one. So next is a major threat to traditional medicine and cancer diagnostics all around the world. Honeybees can detect lung cancer, researchers say. Honeybees may be able to help develop a new form of cancer screening, according to Michigan State University researchers. What happens when you pair honeybees and halitosis? Potentially a life-saving new method to screen for cancer, according to one study. Researchers at the Michigan State University have learned that honeybees can detect chemicals associated with lung cancer in human breath. The insects were able to sniff out human lung cancer biomarkers with a remarkable 82% success rate, according to a study published in the journal Biosensors and Bioelectronics. These results indicate that the honeybee olfactory system can be used as a sensitive biological gas sensor to detect human lung cancer, the study authors write. Insects have an amazing sense of smell, the same way dogs do, said MSU professor. I'm going to botch this name here, Debajit Saha, according to an MSU news release. Saha, an assistant professor in the College of Engineering and MSU's Institute for Quantitative Health Science and Engineering, sought to determine whether honeybees could distinguish chemicals in a healthy person's breath from that of someone sick with lung cancer. His team developed a recipe for a synthetic breath mixture that contains six compounds present in the breath of someone with cancer and a synthetic healthy breath mixture. So, really interesting article. I think it's fascinating. I don't really know how that works. So if you're working with a group of bees and you teach them, train them, or whatever it might be to react in a certain way. You know, honeybees, they die pretty quickly. So let's just say you have a bee in an optimal, ideal scenario where they're not having to put out a lot of work. And let's just say maybe you're able to keep them alive for 50 or 60 days. What is, like, how do you teach them in that period of time and then put them to work and then guarantee accuracy? Like, are you constantly training the next round of breathalyzer honeybees? I think it's a really cool, neat thing. I'm kind of a little bit baffled that we have such a surplus of funding money to put towards this. I think that's interesting, but I don't know, like, how do you make real use of it? I mean, to me, I really, if someone says, hey, we gave you a cancer diagnosis, it's about 80%. I mean, that's not bad. I'd rather see it like around the 94 to 98% accuracy range. But like I said, it's interesting. It's very fascinating. What do you do from here, I guess, is my next question. Okay, last one on the list for this week. Discovery of rare bee species in Con Edison's transmission right-of-way creates a buzz. Rare bee species are foraging on native shrubs and wildflowers growing along Con Edison transmission lines, according to biologists from the State University of New York's College of Environmental Science and Forestry. Biologists' most exciting discovery to date is a male Nomada electella, a species that had never been recorded in New York. The discovery of regionally rare bees on transmission corridors is extremely important for pollinator conservation, said Molly Jacobson, native pollinator ecologist, SUNY-ESF. These rare bees rely on very specific resources like certain flowers, soils, or particular hosts in the case of parasitic bees, which have become scarce in the Northeast due to reforestation and development of the sandy, open, or shrubby habitats. Jacobson continued, seeing so many of these rare bees thrive in right-of-ways tells us that the vegetation management used to keep transmission corridors open is maintaining the critical habitat they need. Every new population of these bees researchers can find and study contributes to our understanding of them and how we can best protect them and the unique roles they play in their ecosystems. The Nomada electa, native to the United States, was first identified in 1903. Until 2014, no male Nomada electa had been documented. Nomada electa is a kind of cuckoo bee. They are nest parasites, meaning that they lay their eggs in the nest of other bee species instead of making their own. The host of Nomada electa is still unknown, making each sighting of this bee valuable to answering the question of why it is so rare. Kind of a cool article. It continues on a little bit further. Definitely worth the read, I think. Well, everyone, that does it for this week's Bees in the News segment. If you find something that's really cool, neat, interesting that you'd like to share, feel free to post it in our Discord room or send me an email at jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S. Your article could be featured in next week's In the News segment. All right, everybody, take care. Be kind to one another. And remember, I love y'all, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.